Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Episode 41 of the Announcer Schedule Podcast. We are live. It's a Thursday afternoon as we're getting you ready for all the big calls. The Sweet 16 starts back up if you're listening tonight. We got the weekend. We had a great week of the NCAA Tournament, the World Baseball Classic. Before we get started, I want to remind you, we are a part of Last Word on Sports. You get three podcasts for the price of one free. All we ask you to do is kindly like, rate, review, subscribe. Five-star ratings are always recommended. You can check us out on Last Word on Sports, Tell Me a Story I Don't Know, George Offman, and Last Word on Sports Media with TJ Reeves. Talking sports media here on the Announcer Schedules Podcast, we talk announcers. Holy moly, good to be back. I had a week vacation. I'm your host, Mike Gill. Phil DeMont Mullen, he is the face, the voice behind the Twitter handle at Announcer Skeds. It's been a 2 weeks since I saw you, Phil. A lot has happened. I met a couple of listeners of the podcast while we did that MAC championship game. So people are listening. That's nice to see. How are you?
Doing great. Great to have you back, Mike. How was the vacation?
Vacation was good. I was down in Clearwater Beach checking in on the Phillies, and I went to a Blue Jays game over in Dunedin, watched a lot of NCAA basketball. So, you know, it's back to reality, back to the podcast world, I guess you could say, right?
Yeah. And then, wow, what a time to come back and to us to sort of re-enter as far as all that's going on. So much with March Madness, of course, World Baseball Classic. I mean, what an event that turned out to be. And then we're going to also offer an interview later in the show. TJ Reeves, who, you know, kindly was the guest substitute host for you last week while you're on vacation. Mike, he and I did an interview with Branda Van Lingen, who called that dramatic Miami upset over Indiana on the women's side. So a lot to get into, a lot happening across the world of sports broadcasting, obviously. And, you know, March Madness, I mean, how much fun has this been?
That's right. Let's dive right into it. How much fun? Take a listen.
Four guards out there, along with Cedric on the best free throw shooter. Clark in a straight checker.
All right, Kevin Harlan, CBS, Dan Bonner, and Stan Van Gundy, who, by the way, Van Gundy commented on the next game. Hey, that's the first college game I got in this tournament. I get that one. Harlan has since said he's a little embarrassed by the video and the call. I thought it was epic. I loved it. I thought the energy was outstanding. I loved him putting the arms out, telling everybody, not a word, everybody. That play deserved it. It was an epic call.
Yeah. I would imagine most listeners of this podcast have already seen the video. It certainly went viral. And, you know, I think fans really, really enjoy seeing these views from the booth. But what a moment, and what a, you know, we've talked about Harlan before, you know, a master class once again on how to handle these big moments. And you can actually see the visual of how to handle that big moment. And he's so demonstrative. And then the reactions from Bonner, who, by the way, you know, we've talked about this as well. Yeah, I don't think by any means there's any sort of bias, especially with a broadcaster like Dan Bonner, who's been around all these years, but he's a University of Virginia guy. And then Stan Van Gundy, like you said, you know, this entree into the college basketball broadcasting world. And then the look on his face, there's even a Where's Waldo moment in the background where we can see our very own TJ Reeves, who was on site, which is kind of funny if you look closely there. But as far as, you know, Kevin Harlan goes, what a lesson on how to handle these big moments. And, you know, he wanted to make sure that his analysts were laying out for him right there. And, you know, he put up his arms and so forth. And, you know, it just kind of amazing, that video. It certainly has gotten a huge reaction. I can kind of understand what where Kevin Harlan's going. You know, he cited Westwood One, how it's their policy not to produce any of those, you know, in booth, you know, shots and that kind of thing. But at the same time, this is such a valuable piece of information and so forth for especially aspiring broadcasters, but I think the public too, to appreciate what these broadcasters do.
Yeah, Harlan, Van Gundy, Bonner on that call. Then we had Andrew Catalan, who maybe just upped his stock for next year's NCAA tournament, because as we know, Jim Nantz is moving on. Ian Eagle will take over the number one chair, Phil. So that means there's a chair open to maybe get that second weekend, that next round of games. And Andrew Catalan may have moved up the depth chart.
Moore straightaway three. It's good! FDU, believe it! For just the second time ever, a 16 beats a one. Here's Boyd, 5 seconds left. Boyd drives, scores with 2.5. Lomax at midcourt. McCadden doesn't get it off, and the Owls win it.
There's Andrew Catalan. March Madness, he gets two for the price of one. In one day, he gets two great games. One, maybe the biggest upset we've ever seen.
Yeah, and, you know, we had Andrew Catalan on our podcast as one of our first guests way back last summer. If folks want to look back into the archives and give that a re-listen. You know, his partners, Steve Lapis, the two of them have called hundreds of games together. You know, a lot of these play-by-play and analyst combinations that we see in college basketball, they sort of fluctuate a bit. And, you know, there's some familiarity with some of the teams, but a lot of times, you know, from year to year, the play-by-player and the analyst might rotate around and that kind of thing. But these two have been together for years, and they've really cemented chemistry between the two of them. And I think Catalan nailed it. There's a story on JerseySportingNews.com by a friend of mine, David Trattner, who is covering sports media in your neck of the world, Mike, in the New Jersey area. And he was able to catch up with Andrew the day after that call, and they were able to exchange notes and so forth. And Andrew revealed that, you know, he came up with that, you know, that signature call about FDU during the game. You know, there was a couple text exchanges with some buddies of his, and he kind of came up with it and wrote it down. And, you know, it's kind of cool to hear behind the curtain how somebody comes up with a signature call like that. The other note in terms of, you know, Andrew Catalan, we not only heard the FDU call, but that FAU call was that night as well. And this team, I thought they were outstanding. Catalan, Lapis, and Erdahl not only performed well throughout the first and second rounds, but also were blessed with some amazing games. You know, obviously these upsets, but then they had some real personality and some great moments with Jamie Erdahl, the sideline reporter, who, by the way, you know, hasn't done as much sideline reporting, if any, you know, up this season up to this point, because she's now the host of Good Morning Football over on NFL Network. So, you know, it was cool to see Erdahl back in the mix. She had some big moments. She became a star of the first and second round of the tournaments. Obviously, she's a big name already. But, you know, if you were to, you know, hand out, you know, awards as far as who stood out, she would probably, you know, be the sideline reporter, because she covered the big upsets, but also had these big moments with Tom Izzo and Shaka Smart, you know, that were really compelling also. So just great work by that team. They're the one that I enjoyed listening to as much as any. Catalan, Lapis, and Erdahl, great stuff. And like you said, Mike, it'll be interesting because, you know, there will be a little bit of musical chairs going on with these NCAA tournament pairings next year as Jim Nantz steps away, Ian Eagle moves up to that number one team, and things shift around a bit from there.
By the way, Jamie Erdahl had one of the moments of the whole tournament when John L. Davis used profanity on TV, and she said, "That's all right, we're on True TV, man." She handled it great. And she also had that great piece on the student director of athletics of media at FDU. They don't have someone that's, you know, a full-time on that job. They have a junior student by the name of Jordan Sarnoff, and she uncovered that and did a piece on that, and that was another great moment of the tournament. But, yeah, Jamie Erdahl, for you Good Morning Football fans, she did a great job there. Now let's talk a little bit about these musical chairs. Go ahead.
Well, one sec, Mike. I do want to touch on the sports information director at Fairleigh Dickinson, because folks might know that, you know, I'm a sports information director. I'm at a Division III institution here in the mountains of Western North Carolina, Brevard College. I've been in the sports information world most of my career. I'm a member of our industry organization and all those kind of things. The piece on Jordan Sarnoff, just for so people have the background. At 12 years old, he attended the Iron Eagle sports broadcasting camp, got to know Iron Eagle. He later met Mets PR, kind of a legendary figure, Jay Horowitz, and, you know, kind of got this dream going that he wanted to work in sports PR. Approached Fairleigh Dickinson when he was a high school senior, started working in the office, and has built his way up from there. He's done an outstanding job by all accounts. Everything I've heard is that he is just absolutely crushing it in terms of a sports information director at this young age as a junior in college. That being said, this is a touchy subject when it comes to us who are sports information directors, because a lot of the budgets have shrunk and are, you know, a lot of places are, you know, hamstrung in terms of budgets, in terms of resources, in terms of these sorts of things with sports information departments. And a lot of them are one-man shops, and a lot of them have zero support. So honestly, like, I don't know if this is the best thing to be promoting. It's obviously a great story and so forth, but it hurts the industry that I'm involved in, because it tells athletic directors who might not have a clear perspective on the value of sports information directors and also other higher-ups that, hey, we can get away with a student and don't need anyone with any experience in these important roles of sports information director. Nothing against Sarnoff. He's kicking butt. But a school going to the NCAA tournament should have a veteran sports information director, or at least a full-time staff of some sort, supporting the team and all the media that's going on. So I just had to sound off on that for a moment, Mike. I appreciate you bringing up the story, but I wanted to bring that perspective into it, because what's happening within my industry, a lot of people are saying, hey, whoa, pump the brakes here. You know, the last thing we need to plant in people's mind is that, hey, you can get away with a student in these roles, and let's slash some more budget, you know, kind of thing. And, you know, it's been a dying profession in a lot of ways. A lot of great sports information directors have literally left the business because of budgets, because of work-life balance thing and that kind of thing. And it's not what it used to be. And so I just want to put up a caution flag when it comes to celebrating, you know, this story at FDU. I don't, you know, judge anybody for bringing it up. It obviously is a compelling story, but I think this part of it needs to be told as well.
Well said. Yes, obviously. And look, FDU, a commuter school, much smaller, obviously, day-to-day sports operations, travel, a lot less media request. They happen to get bombarded with requests for 3 days, not 12 months. That's a big difference in the job right there, that a lot of these SIDs, I've dealt with a lot of SIDs. They do a lot of stuff, a lot of day-to-day, not to mention getting the notes together, getting all the, you know, preseason, you know, putting those media guides together, getting all the stats, putting them all out, handing them out to everybody. It is a big undertaking, and, yeah, that's a job that
and
I hope.
And covering every sport that every college offers, not just, you know, college hoops or college football or what have you. So it's a handful. It's a huge undertaking for any of these departments. And, you know, I just want to speak up for sports information departments everywhere that, hey, invest in sports information departments if you're an athletic director or school president or something, because it's going to pay dividends, especially when the school has an opportunity like this. You know, you could be beat. The more PR people you have beating your drum, you know, the more publicity you're going to get, and the more those admissions are going to rise at places like FDU.
All right. I want to talk a little bit about these musical chairs. This weekend, we got Thursday, Friday, Sweet 16. Then this weekend, we have the Elite Eight on Saturday, Sunday. But we know Iron Eagle is moving into the number one chair. So the question will be, he has been in that number one chair Iron Eagle has been in that chair with Jim Sparnarkle for as long as I can remember. So when Iron Eagle moves to the number one chair, what happens to that Jim Sparnarkle pairing, I guess, will be the big question, and who gets that second weekend of games.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I mean, I haven't seen an announcement officially yet who the number one crew is going to be. So I think first and foremost, we're not 100% sure it's going to necessarily be Eagle, Raftery, Hill, you know, like we've seen with Nance, Raftery, and Hill. So I think that's piece number one of the puzzle we need to make sure of. And then you're right, you know, like certainly Andrew Catalan would be someone who would make a lot of sense as far as bumping up. You know, the Elite Eight pairings, the play-by players are Brian Anderson, Kevin Harlan, Iron Eagle, and Jim Nance currently. So we need one more, you know, as far as that slot goes, assuming Anderson and Harlan continue on, which you would imagine would be the case. And, you know, it's guys, if you were to look at those names you were reading off as terms of who worked these first and second rounds, it's guys like Nestler, Catalan, Lisa Byington, and Spiro Ditas would be like, you know, just the sort of, you know, incumbents who would be possibilities here. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see, you know, how this all kind of works its way out. You know, Catalan's been together with Lapis for a long time, as we mentioned. And as you mentioned, Eagle and Sparnarkle have been together, you know, for a long, long time. So it'll be interesting how this all shakes itself out. And it's kind of maybe a little too early to say. I think first and foremost, we need to learn, you know, who that number one team definitively is going to be, you know, whether indeed it will be Raftery and Hill with Eagle.
Right. That will be interesting. You know, if they just move Iron into that spot with Raftery and Hill, then Jim Sparnarkle kind of needs a new partner, and he's been working with Eagle for as long as I can remember. So what happens in that spot? Does he stay in that spot, or do they just keep a team together and move that team together? That, I guess, would be the next question, right? Do they want to keep Jim Sparnarkle in that spot on that second weekend and just give him a new play-by player, or do they want to bring a new play-by play tandem analyst and move Sparnarkle, and I don't want to say demote him, but move him back to that first weekend? That'll be really a decision that CBS and what are they called, Warner Sports or whatever the heck they're called now, Turner.
Warner Brothers Discovery. And I think, you know, Sparnarkle, you know, following, you know, the entire college basketball season, does work with quite a few partners beyond Iron Eagle,
yes.
You know, because he works a lot of regular season games as well. So he's certainly adaptable to whoever, you know, they end up using. But yeah, it's going to be interesting.
Right.
You know,
he might be adaptable. That's not the question. I'm sure he could. But the question is, do they just want to keep a pairing and just move them into a new spot?
Yeah. And
because now, if you change, let's say they put Andrew Catalan with Jim Sparnarkle. Well, now you need a new play-by-player for Steve Lapis. If you're taking that from someplace else, then you're going to need a new play-by-player for that. This is the old, hey, if I just take one team and move them, I only need to change one spot and give Sparnarkle a partner.
Yeah.
So that will be something pretty interesting. But there's your schedule for the weekend. Starting tonight, we're recording on Thursday. Brian Anderson, Jim Jackson, Allie the Force, Westwood One, Gary Cohen, John Crispin, CBS, Kevin Harlan, Dan Bonner, Stan Van Gundy, Lauren Chahadi on the sidelines, Ryan Radke, PJ Carlissimo. On Friday, it's Eagle, Sparnarkle, Evan Washburn on the sidelines, Tom McCarthy, former guest of the show, Jordan Cornette on Westwood One, Jim Nance, Raftery, Hill, Wolfson, and then Kevin Kugler, another former guest of our podcast. Go and check those back in the archives with Robbie Hummel, are doing that game on Westwood One Radio. So there's the tournament. The tournament's been great. Down the stretch we come. By the way, the final season for Jim Nance, and we know his Houston ties, the Cougars are still in it. There's been a lot of discussion about will he get to call his alma mater in that final game.
Yeah, you know, we'll see what happens starting this weekend. You know, the team that I, you know, cheer for because of my background, the Miami Hurricanes, taking on Houston. Nance will call that one in Kansas City with Raftery Hill and Wolfson. So we'll see if Houston survives. They would have to get through either Xavier or Texas after that. And then, you know, like you said, the opportunity for Nance to call his alma mater, which he's very loyal to. You know, there seems to always be, you know, talk of that and in his connection with Houston and so forth. A couple other notes I noticed as we're going through this weekend's Sweet 16 and Elite Eight. Gary Cohen on the Westwood One call. You know, folks, of course, know him, you know, as the television voice of the Mets. He wasn't part of the first and second round Westwood One coverage, and I was kind of wondering why that was. You know, one of our followers and listeners pointed out that, you know, Seton Hall had made the NIT, and Gary is also the play-by-play radio voice of Seton Hall, so that might have been the case there. Of course, he may have had some Mets television obligations also, but bottom line is he'll be on the call with John Crispin for some of that Westwood One coverage from Madison Square Garden, all the games at MSG Thursday and Saturday. And then Tom McCarthy, as you mentioned, you know, back with Westwood One, he wasn't part of the first and second round coverage either. He was on that first four coverage on True TV on the TV side. So cool to see him back. Was he down in Clearwater for some games for the Phillies in the meantime?
He does. I know today he is not doing the game. I think they're moving Scott Fransky, the radio voice, to television. And here's a shout out. John Brazier, the director of Fun and Games for the Phillies, is doing play-by-play on radio today with Tommy Green, the former Phillies 93 pitcher. So that's a completely new radio pairing for the game today for the Phillies, because they have a split squad game, and I believe the radio team is doing the television broadcast.
Gotcha. Yeah, and you know, Kevin Kugler, Robbie Hummel, as you mentioned, the other Westwood One pairing. You know, one pairing that was there for the first round that, you know, I guess their season's over. Brandon Gaudin, who's the newly, you know, Braves voice. So he'll be shifting over to baseball. Obviously a big opportunity for him as the new voice of the Braves. He's going to keep on doing work for Fox as well. But he was teamed with Stephen Bardo in the games down in Birmingham. And TJ Reeves had a great interview with Stephen Bardo on the podcast directly before ours, you know, on Last Word on Sports Media podcast. And Bardo had some great insight as far as, you know, how he got into the broadcasting world as a student athlete, you know, and ultimately an NBA player, you know, for playing his college ball at Illinois, and how he approached ESPN and this kind of thing. Really a cool story there, but want to encourage listeners to give that a listen. And yeah, I've enjoyed a lot of the Westwood One coverage as I've been driving around, and you know, they do such a great job on the production side, and the voices really, you know, bring into the action. They have sort of this mix feature also online that you could stream, you know, through your car on Bluetooth. That's what I was doing, where they sort of toss it around to whatever game is heading down the stretch and that kind of thing. Jason Horowitz is the studio host. So good stuff there. And yeah, I can't wait to get this going. It starts tonight. You know, we're right back at it with more March Madness.
Right. Well, let's transfer then over to baseball. And the WBC kind of stole the baseball world for a couple of days there. And it started last week and it finished up the other night. And Joe Davis, Tuesday night, the WBC final, Japan, USA.
Trout's ready. 3-2.
He struck him out! Ohtani strikes out Trout, and Japan's back on top of the baseball world.
Broke out his best slider on the 3-2 pitch. Wow.
All right, so you hear the long layout there from Joe Davis and John Smoltz. And Smoltz offers just a small bit of analysis about 20 to 30 seconds later in that call, Phil.
Yeah, you know, we've talked about that throughout the show, how critical that is for these big moments. You know, Joe Davis ended up calling the semifinals and also the championship game. And, you know, Kenny Albert, you know, moved into his role for a couple of games over the weekend, a couple of the quarterfinals, I believe, from Miami. And earlier in the World Baseball Classic, Jason Benetti did a couple games before he went over to March Madness coverage for Westwood One. But yeah, you know, Joe Davis has certainly, you know, risen to the occasion as this number one play-by-player succeeding Joe Buck over at Fox. And this World Baseball Classic, what a ton of moments it had, and a lot of electricity, and yeah, some great calls to go along with it.
And we had Dave Fleming on the play-by-play for the World feed. Take a listen.
He throws. Trout strikes out swinging. Ohtani and Japan celebrate a World Baseball Classic championship.
Dave Fleming, that's the World feed there. And, you know, just a quick one there. He got him, you know, swinging on a 3-2 pitch as Smoltz kind of, you know, so the drama of here we are, 3-2, bottom of the ninth. Man, people are talking about this at bat, and these announcers just had an epic moment to describe.
Yeah, and, you know, we were able to post the entire at bat. You know, Fox was able to clip that out. So folks want to look on the Twitter feed and check that out, because it is sort of worth watching the whole sequence and everything, not just for the announcing call, but just the drama of the sport itself and the electricity in the air at the venue. Dave Fleming, you know, he got a lot of great response, you know, on social media as far as his calls on the World feed. A lot of people were asking me, how do I get to watch this World feed? And, you know, essentially when Fox was doing the games, that, you know, the World feed, you had to be, you know, in other parts of the world, obviously, you know, places like Canada, you would be able to catch the World feed in English. And Dave Fleming, who, you know, does a great job with ESPN across a number of sports, also is one of the voices of the San Francisco Giants. He's got just a classic, you know, baseball voice, and I think he does it masterfully. His partner, by the way, Yonder Alonso, former Major League Baseball star and also University of Miami product, he grew up just, you know, a few minutes away from, you know, the ballpark down there in Little Havana in Miami. So kind of cool that he got to do all these games with Fleming. A couple of them were actually aired on FS1. If you're wondering why that was, it was basically, again, like if Fox wasn't, you know, doing the broadcast themselves, they would use the World feed and on those games that were broadcast over FS1. But, you know, great call from both Joe Davis and Dave Fleming of a moment that has really propelled, I think, the World Baseball Classic into what's going to be, you know, a must-see big-time event. It just continues to grow each time around.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Well, it was a big time event in Japan. Here's how they called it on their feed in Japan.
Full count, Otani ka, Trout ka. We'll be right back. して人々の心に響いた、そんな日本の野球です。
All right, so there you go. Obviously, in Japan, that's how they called it. And this is their third WBC championship. So a big one for them. The Americans were the defending champions.
I don't think you can understate how popular the sport of baseball is in Japan. And, you know, that obviously contributes to not only their success, you know, on the field, but certainly the excitement, you know, with the broadcasters and, you know, with the fans of that Japanese team.
Yes, and obviously, by the way, quick baseball note. I don't know if you saw this one out there to the people, but we're talking about broadcasters and everything, and you talked about everybody's schedules all over the place. How about Roger Clemens going to join ESPN's national broadcast opening night when the Astros host the White Sox, because – Dave Cone is going to be doing the Yankees opener, and so Cone will not be on the broadcast. They're bringing in the Rocket, Roger Clemens, as a special game analyst for opening night Astros and White Sox. He's going to be with Carl Ravitch and Eduardo Perez and Buster Olney, and that is at March 30th, a week from tonight. So Dave Cone will be working the Yankees opener on YES. So they're bringing in the Rocket, Roger Clemens, my favorite player of all time.
Wow, I did not know that about your love of Clemens. But, you know, as far as that announcement goes, you know, the ESPN cited his work with the K-Rod cast, if you remember that last year, that they're going to be bringing back this year with Michael Kay and Alex Rodriguez. That Kay and Rodriguez are going to do some additional games as well beyond the K-Rod cast this season. But they mentioned that they were impressed when Clemens came on to that show last year, and, you know, thought this would be a good fit, and obviously, you know, fill in a void there as far as, you know, David Cone and all that he's juggling as well.
Yep. And by the way, Michael Kay, the voice of the Yankees, there was a lot of speculation that he was going to leave his role as a sports talk radio host in New York. He's the host of the Michael Kay Show on 98.7 ESPN in New York. He announced a new 2-year contract, so he is staying on board to be his afternoon drive show, so he'll continue in that role as well. All right, we're going to have an interview coming up. TJ and Phil talked to women's broadcaster Brenda Van Langen, and that's going to be coming up in just a couple of minutes here. But first, before we get to that, let's take a look at the NCAA women's tournament, because their Sweet 16 and Elite 8 is this weekend.
Yeah, so we're heading into the Sweet 16 and Elite 8 on the women's side as well. A lot of familiar names, especially if you watch college basketball throughout the regular season. You know, there's a regional going on down in Greenville, South Carolina. Courtney Lyle, Caroline Peck, and Brooke Weisbrod on the call there. And actually, there's a second ESPN crew down there in Greenville as well, which is Beth Mowins, Debbie Antonelli, and Angel Gray. What's interesting about Debbie Antonelli, you know, she called the men's tournament in the first and second round on television with Spiro Dedis as her partner. The game's happening up in Albany, New York. She'll now head to Greenville, South Carolina, and she's doing double duty on these Greenville games, where the games that she's not calling for ESPN, she's doing those for Westwood One with Jason Ross as her play-by-player there. Out in Seattle, Pam Ward, Stephanie White, Holly Rowe reporting. I got the chance to work with Pam Ward and Stephanie White this past weekend at the first and second round games in Knoxville, Tennessee. That was cool for me to be on site for a women's NCAA first and second round and kind of get the feel of that. Other crews include Ryan Rucco, Rebecca Lobo, and Andrea Carter, also up there in Seattle. So it'll be interesting as far as how all this goes down, and we'll continue to watch the women's tournament as well, which has brought us some great moments already in its first couple rounds also.
Yes, some really big moments, and you guys got a chance to catch up with one of the voices of that big moment. Let's take a listen to that moment before we introduce our guest, Brenda Van Langen. Here we go.
And advance to the Sweet 16 and pull off another upset over a number one seed with this possession. Harden
Okay, that was Brenda Van Langen on the call, and TJ Reeves and Phil DeMont Mullen catch up with her in this conversation on this week's edition of the Announcer Schedules podcast. Stick around. Phil and I will be back on the other side. We've got a nice Willis Reed tribute for you guys, but stick around after the conversation. Phil and I will be back on this week's edition of the Announcer Schedules podcast.
Well, it is a special conversation here on the Announcer Schedules podcast. I'm TJ Reeves hanging here with Phil DeMont Mullen, and it is our pleasure to welcome in. She was right off the call in the women's NCAA tournament of the Miami upset over Indiana in Bloomington earlier this week on the ESPN family of networks. But Brenda Van Langen is right here right now on the Announcer Schedules podcast. I guess the first thing is, it's been a couple of days. Has it sunk in that you called and we watched what you called and what we watched with Miami pulling that upset against the number one seed? Welcome.
Yeah, thank you so much for inviting me to be a part of this. Yeah, I guess it sunk in. I mean, I've gone back and watched most of the game again and just thought about it and how exciting that it was on all the network morning shows, the finish of our game. It was just an incredible game. The effort by Miami was incredible, and Indiana had so many chances. It's just amazing to go back and look at what happened.
Phil and I both love diving into this part, and I do a lot of play-by-play. At what point are you grasping Miami can maybe do this? And then you've got a crazy sequence at the end of the game where Miami scores for the lead and Indiana doesn't have a timeout. Take us through the process of Miami could do this, Miami may be about to do this, and you're having to call it while it happens on the fly.
Yeah, it was such an interesting game because in the first round, Miami had not played well in the first half and came through and outscored Oklahoma State in the second half to win the game. And so I talked about that a lot on the first part of the Indiana game because they got a great start against Indiana and they really had the Hoosiers on their heels the whole game. And the whole time I felt like Indiana was going to come back at any time. And then they made that run in the third quarter, but they never could in the third quarter tie it, and they never went ahead. And so early in the fourth quarter, I at a timeout, I actually wrote down what I wanted to say at the end of the game if Miami would pull off the upset, because I find that helps me make sure I'm focused and say what I want to say. So I had written it down with about what at one of the early media timeouts in the fourth quarter, just in case. And then I kept bringing it up in the broadcast that Indiana still hasn't pulled ahead. Now, they tied it. They couldn't hit a free throw to go ahead. And then they were down one several times and never could take the lead. So I know that's such a mental part of the game. And I feel like Indiana just was struggling. But then, in answer to your question, when Indiana ties it with the big three, and then they had an opportunity to go ahead after the missed free throws, and then they miss it. And then the free throws by Miami. I mean, there were so many things that happened in the last minute of that game. It was crazy. And then Garzón hits the step back three to tie it with 6.6 seconds remaining. And you're thinking, we could go to overtime, but that's still a lot of time for Miami. And will Indiana get a stop? And so Miami inbounds it. The scorer, Harden, scores it in the paint. I look at the clock. It's 3.3 seconds remaining. Earlier this year, I had a game where Vandy came all the way back against Arkansas, and Vandy tied it. And with almost the exact same amount of time, Arkansas drove down the court and banked in a three and won the game. So it was almost the exact scenario that I had earlier. I looked, I reminded that there were no timeouts left for Indiana, followed Moore McNeil down the court, looked like she had a path on the right side. She went on the left, the ball was stolen away, and the upset happened. Another number one went down in the second round, and Miami pulled off the upset. So it was just a remarkable set of sequences in the last really 30 seconds or so of that game.
Yeah, and Brenda, you mentioned writing yourself that note during one of the breaks. You know, your analyst alongside you, Holly Warlick, and then, you know, of course, you're in communication with the truck and the producer and so forth. You know, can you take us even further as far as perhaps during the breaks and these moments where you guys can game plan a bit, what that was like those last few minutes?
Yeah, let me think through a little bit. We're trying to make sure that all the storylines are covered, that we've hit everything. I don't know if we even really talked about specifically what if Miami wins this game. We kind of set aside a couple of things that we were thinking about doing because the game was too good. The Cavender twins have this incredible social media presence. And we were going to do kind of a fun spoof on that they, you know, that Holly and I on our social media presence were gaining on them. You know, we have 824 between us and Holly has one and I have 823. We're going to do something fun with that. But we didn't do that because the game was too good. And we talked more about those things and just the actual statistics that were happening. And I just mentioned, Holly and I were talking about the fact that it's such a mental thing that if a team comes back and can't take the lead, it just gets harder and harder throughout the game. So I think that's mainly what we discussed in the breaks.
And Brenda, if we can take it to, you know, more big picture, in full disclosure, I'm a Miami guy all the way around. Like, I grew up a Miami fan. I got to work in the sports information office in the late 90s. Actually was the women's basketball contact for a year with Coach Fern Labadie, if you remember her.
I do.
And, you know, when I think about women's basketball and when I was kind of working with it closely back then, the sport has grown so much. I mean, in so many ways, as far as, you know, the attention it gets, the resources it gets, and so forth. And I'm sure we can tackle that from a, you know, a big picture level. But what I'd like to ask you is, as a broadcaster, the resources, you know, compared to when you started in television covering women's basketball and sort of, you know, maybe it was an afterthought of sorts back then for a lot of folks, but what it's become today and the resources that are coming your way, I know we're not completely there yet, but we've come a long way.
Yeah, it's so exciting. The very first year that I called an NCAA tournament game was in 1996. It was my first year out of coaching, and I had done three games for Nebraska Public Television. That's how I got my start. And that was the year before the Big 12 was formed. And so Texas was placed in Lawrence, Kansas at Allen Fieldhouse. The first round games were not televised, but ESPN reached out to Kansas and said, if Texas and Kansas both advanced to the second round, could you have a local production crew broadcast the game and we'll cut in from the national feed? And so that's how I got on my first NCAA tournament broadcast. Was Texas and Kansas did both advance. We did I think it was called ESPN Regional at the time, did a ESPN Regional broadcast of the game. And near the end of the game, Robin Roberts was still in the studio and she cut out to the site. And I made my national appearance on the NCAA tournament on my fourth game that I ever broadcast.
Wow.
But I was only on nationally for probably like 5 minutes, but it was a really good game itself. So over the years,
we got to stop you on that. You got to have a moment reflecting on that going, is this really happening? That's Robin Roberts from ESPN throwing this to me to call the game. When you reflect on that, reflect a little more.
I was so nervous and juiced, and I remember my heart just pounding in my chest, and it was such a cool thing. We couldn't hear the throw, but we knew they were throwing. The funny thing about that, the other story is, she mispronounced my name because for whatever reason, she didn't get the right pronunciation. And all my friends laughed at me and joked with me afterwards because she introduced us and said, hey, we're going out to Allen Fieldhouse, a great game between Texas and Kansas, Dave Armstrong and Brenda Von Longen. And so for a long time, so a lot of my friends called me Brenda Von Longen because that's how I got introduced on my first my first toss in the NCAA tournament. So, yeah, but it was amazing. And I know I was speaking 100 miles a minute in that game. Just I was the analyst And, you know, Dave Armstrong was a pro. And so I was like jumping in, trying to say all this stuff. I know I was kind of crazy, excited and nervous in that game. But over the years, you know, they didn't start broadcasting the first round games for quite a while. I think when I got back and did some games in 99, 2000, 2001, we just did second round games at that point. And then there were a few years where they moved eight teams to a site in the first and second rounds. And so you had to prepare for eight teams and all those games at one site. And then, you know, when we finally a few years ago got all of the games televised. So a few, you know, and then the evolution was a few were streamed and then ultimately, or they cut in, they televised them at the same time, but you didn't see nationally all the games. You just saw cut-ins, or if you were in your regional area, you saw it, right? That was kind of that next evolution. And then now, finally, the last couple of years, all of the games are on national television. So, you know, that's been terrific to see. Good producers. They still do some Remy productions, which means the producers aren't on site, and that always causes some challenges. But it's certainly grown a lot in all the years. It's my 28th year of broadcasting.
Wow. I don't know that Phil knows this, but watch this, Brenda. Young TJ was the student play-by-play person at then Memphis State. Phil, I don't know that you and I have talked about this at any point off the air, much less on announcer schedules, podcast, et cetera. So I was the radio guy, and you may remember this name, Brenda. Mary Lou Johns was the longtime Memphis State coach, a 500-game winner at Memphis State, and Phil's nodding along too. So I cut my teeth in the women's game 30 plus years ago as well, around the time of your playing career, and it has come light years forward in terms of interest, in terms of technology. Another thing that Phil and I think the audience will be interested in, you mentioned being an analyst and your background of being a player and being a coach. You've now transitioned to being a play-by-play person. That's not the easiest thing to do. How have you found that? How much more comfortable have you gotten? What's the difference in the role? Enlighten us some on that.
Yeah, and I still do both. I probably did about 30 games play-by-play this year and about 15 as an analyst. So, you know, in the course of the same year, depends on what network I'm working for, what role I play. So I was an analyst out of my coaching career for the first probably 15 years or so, and love breaking down the X's and O's, describing the stories, elevating women's sports, just absolutely loved it. And then I was asked by several different networks what I consider doing play-by-play. And at first I was like, no way. No way. I don't have training on that. Not really comfortable. And I did a few smaller tournaments, like an island tournament where I did both. So it kind of gave me the chance to do play-by-play and analyst combined. And so then I started around 2008 or 9 or 10, somewhere in there. And I started doing play-by-play for Fox Sports because I was on the Big 12 package, but they wanted to get me more games. And they said, we can get you more games if you're the play-by-play announcer. So, I mean, I really learned on the fly. And I remember the first game, it was Cal and Texas A&M, not two small teams, not two small universities. And that was my first national play-by-play. And the ball goes up and I'm like, oh, wait, I think I'm supposed to be talking now. And so it took me time. And after 3 years, Fox Sports said, you know what, we'd rather have you go back to being the analyst. And at the same time, ESPN said, oh, you do play-by-play? And so at that time, I shifted. That was about 10 years ago. And so since then, I've done an all play-by-play for ESPN, and any other, whether it's Fox Sports or Big Ten Network or any third-tier games, I'm the analyst. And so they're very different. The preparation's different. I always say my brain has to think completely differently when I'm in each role. When I'm the analyst, I can sit back, observe, watch things develop, predict how they're going to develop, break down the X's and O's. As a former player and coach, I love it. I also say being a play-by-play announcer for me is work. Being an analyst is fun. So play-by-play, you have to be on top of things. You have to know the score, the fouls, the situation, the setup. you say what is happening, describe what is happening, and the analyst describes the how and the why. And so it's a completely different mindset. And honestly, it's been a real challenge for me over the years. And I feel like in the last few years, I'm just kind of coming into my own as a play-by-play announcer. I'm not a traditional play-by-play announcer. I don't think I sound like any play-by-play announcers out there that are like classically trained in it. I'm a former analyst and coach that's now a play-by-play, and I try to bring those strengths to my role, and not be an analyst, but try to set up my analyst in ways that I know will be helpful to them. I've been assigned a lot of rookies to work with in the broadcasting field. I've worked with Candace Parker in one of her very first games on TV, Asia Wilson, who, you know, won with the Aces in the WNBA. I did one of her first games. Andrea Carter, who is now a big star for ESPN. I was with her on her very first games. Holly Warlick, who's just out of coaching and has never done broadcasting. So I've broken in a lot of people into the broadcast field, and being play-by-play has allowed me to work with some incredible talent in this field.
Awesome stuff. Really commend you, Brenda, for stepping into that play-by-play role as well. You know, you mentioned Dave Armstrong. When you think back to the partners that you worked with, the play-by-players you worked with when you were an analyst over the years, are there some that come to mind as far as you sort of taking some maybe tips of the trade from them, or, you know, kind of saying, hey, I remember when such and such, you know, and how he prepared or how she prepared and approached the game?
Absolutely. Thank you for asking that. Yes, Dave Armstrong was one of my first in that setting. Kevin Kugler, who a lot of people know, he and I got our starts basically together at Nebraska Public Television. So it's so fun to see what he's done. Bill Dolman also back at Nebraska Public Television. But when I got onto the Fox Sports package, Bill Land, who now does all the games for the San Antonio Spurs and was a legend really, in television. I learned so much from Bill because I was the rookie working with him, and he really guided me, helping me set up the games. And I always noticed how when I would say something, he would back me up with stats, or he would bookend it with things that kind of didn't just leave my comment hanging in the air, but he would kind of close, you know, bookend it. And I just was always appreciative of that. And that was something that I always had in mind. I work with Kevin Eschenfelder, who also does Houston Astros games. And then most recently with Ron Thulin, who he and I worked together for 10 years on Fox Sports. And he's the best. I just love Ron to death. His preparation is unequaled. As far as he prepares for games and how he sets up his analyst. And he just is a tremendous talent and a great friend. And I really miss working with him. And, you know, right after the Big 12 championship ended and I called the Iowa State Big 12 championship title game, he was the first one to text me and said, "You nailed it. You did a great job." And I miss working with him. I learned so much from him, and he's still working hard at it. And, thank you for asking me. I've worked with a lot of really good play-by-play guys.
This has been fantastic stuff, Brenda. We love getting to know more about broadcasters, their stories. Again, you're a former star player. You've been an administrator. Now you're in the role as an analyst. And again, I say to the audience, people think the play-by-play part of it is easy, and Brenda's nodding along, until you start trying to grasp what all you have to grasp to call a game on television, much less call it on radio where they allegedly can't see what's going on and you're having to call it. So bravo to you. Bravo for the job that you did the other night. And the drama continues now this weekend with the women's tournament, right? Turn it up another notch or two, because they've had fantastic finishes over and over again in the Final Four and championship games. Why do I get the feeling we're going to get much of the same Elite Eight, Final Four title game, right? Get ready.
I think so. I mean, two number one seeds have already been eliminated. So I think there's a lot of parity in the game. I definitely think it's South Carolina's to lose at this point. But, you know, they've had a lot of teams that have pushed them, at least in the first halves, and they have to shoot well and wear teams down with their depth and their great a variety, diversity of talents. So I think it's theirs to lose, but I think there's still some big, big games and big moments and finishes to come up.
And Brenda, what's coming up next for you personally? You know, of course, an off season. I'm sure there's chances to recharge the batteries, hopefully. But, you know, tell us what's on deck for you.
Well, I have been working on a documentary series for the last couple of years called If Not For Them. And it's the story of those that built the foundation for college women's basketball. If not for them, we would not have what we do today. And so over the last couple of years, I've raised money to conduct over 100 interviews across the country, interviewing women that played and coached and were administrators in the 50s, 60s, and 70s before the NCAA took over, and those that had to battle the early battles of Title IX. And after I completed those interviews last fall, I started putting together a preview of each of the 10 episodes, and we're going to showcase it at the Final Four this year, March 30th in Dallas, at a private viewing. But anybody that's a contributor that goes to ifnotforthem.com and makes a contribution is invited. But we're going to show a preview of each of the 10 episodes. Each of the 10 episodes of that, and then try to get a funder for the rest of the project. And I'm really proud of it, and I'm really excited about it. So if you get a chance, check out ifnotforthem.com, because it's an amazing effort to preserve and share the history of women's basketball, the hidden figures of women's basketball that many people don't know about, have never heard of, or have forgotten. And it's a great project. So thanks for asking.
Love it. Great stuff. Phil, we've enjoyed this with Brenda Van Lingen. Tremendous here on the Announcer Schedules podcast. Anything else in closing, Phil, here for Brenda?
No, I think it's just fantastic to have you on. I mean, it's really fascinating moving from that analyst to play-by-play role. So thank you for, you know, bringing us behind the curtain there a bit. And hey, what a game you got to call, this Indiana-Miami classic. You know, that's one that be remembered for a long, long time in the women's college basketball ranks.
Yeah, I'm really thankful to have the opportunities that I do. And, you know, it just amazes me sometimes that I've done this for 28 years now, and I get the best seat in the house to tell the stories of these young women and describe what's happening on the court and just to share it and elevate women's basketball. And I appreciate being on your show today to be able to talk about it a little bit. So thanks so much.
Brenda, thank you. Great job. Here's more with Mike and Phil now on the Announcer Schedules podcast.
All right, TJ, thanks so much. Great conversation. And boy, she got that call, the upset there. And hey, wrote a great story and everything that Brenda told you guys. I mean, what really was something that stood out, Phil, about that conversation with Brenda?
First and foremost, sort of like what we were talking about with Andrew Catalan, you know, that game, the Miami-Indiana game that we listened to the clip of as well, you know, as far as Brenda's process coming up with how she was going to approach the potential upset and her preparing during the breaks as far as, you know, what she might use in terms of some language when Miami upset Indiana, which was indeed the case. So it's cool to go behind the curtain and learn that process. But also, you know, Brenda's one of these, you know, rare announcers who has done and continues to do both analyst and play-by-play work. You know, she started as an analyst, did that for several years, and then basically was told, you know, by the networks that, hey, we can get you a lot more assignments if you're also able to do play-by-play, and we think you can do it. Are you up for the task? And she was able to take it on and learn the craft of play-by-play announcing as well. And so now she does a bit of both, you know, depending on the network that she's working for and depending on the pairing and so forth. But, you know, to be able to take on that challenge and to, you know, be able to, you know, learn that new role and for her to, you know, be able to explain, you know, just exactly, you know, the differences between analysts and play-by-play work. She is not afraid to say that play-by-play work, it feels more like work than being an analyst at a game, and that there's a lot more for her to keep track of and pay attention to and that kind of thing. But she's done a great job with both and seems to be enjoying both as well. And it was a real thrill to have the chance to talk to her, you know, just coming off that big upset win, Miami over Indiana.
By the way, those are hiring out there, I do both analyst and play-by-play.
Ah, there you go. There it is.
Now, I heard you guys played a clip of my call from the MAC championship game on TuneIn Radio. Did you use my play-by-play? Because TJ and I shared roles in that game. Did you use my play-by-play, or did you use my color analyst?
Yeah, it was a play-by-play clip, Mike. So I still need to hear you as a analyst before I can 100% endorse you. And I'm sure you did a great job with that as well.
All right. Did you have a grade on my play-by-play? I'll tell you, it was a great game. It was a great atmosphere. Iona Maris, we called the game, TJ and I, for TuneIn Radio. It was a close game, down to about 5 minutes left in the game, and then Iona kind of pulled away. And Rick Pitino, one of his final games ever at Iona, we got the chance to call it. Pretty cool at Atlantic City's historic Boardwalk Hall. And we were at that game. But if you want to go to a March Madness game from now to the Final Four or the championship game, use Ticket Smarter for your ticket selections and prices. Download the Ticket Smarter mobile app or go to TicketSmarter.com for tournament selection all the way to the championship game. Well, you've been at all these games where you want to go to support your favorite team. Your purchase is 100% secure through their system with competitive prices on the secondary market. Use our Hoops code HOOPS23. You get $50 off your order of $400 or more. These tickets are a little bit more pricey. We're going to give you $50 off if you spend over $400 on tickets. Just use the code HOOPS23 from Ticket Smarter. This March Madness season, think smarter, ticket smarter. Remember, HOOPS23, that's the code. And don't forget, like, rate, review, subscribe, leave us a review, and let us know what you think. 5 stars are way better than any other stars you could give us. 5 stars are definitely the request. That helps out immensely. If you're listening, just bang that 5 stars. Give us a review. Let us know what you think, and we do appreciate it. All right, we'll close out. Willis Reed passed away recently. We continue to have these great giants of the sports world pass away in recent weeks here. I feel like we're doing these tributes a lot here on the Announcer Schedules podcast. But Willis, a big situation here. As many people will always remember Willis Reed walking out of the tunnel as described in Game 7 of the 1970s Finals, Marv Albert.
I think we see Willis coming out.
Here comes Willis, and the crowd is going wild. Arnett to Reed on the forecourt, right side from 20, jumps, yes. Willis has hit on his first two. He bullets one down court that is intercepted by the Busher. Fast break for the next. The Busher on the drive. Leads Reed and driving shot is good. The New York Knickerbockers have won the 1969-70 World Championship of Basketball.
So hearing Marv do those calls of the great Willis Reed, but how about the pregame? And they're pointing, here comes Willis Reed. They see him coming through.
Yeah, what a moment in sports broadcasting that was. Obviously one of the iconic moments, you know, in the NBA as well. And yeah, Willis Reed, you know, usually we're paying tribute to the announcers. I was digging to see if he had ever spent any time broadcasting. I wasn't able to find somebody. Maybe one of our listeners has, you know, some sort of example of Willis Reed actually being in the booth at some point. But he did spend time in his post-playing career, you know, as both a coach and then also, you know, general manager, spent a lot of time with the Nets in particular, also was the VP of basketball operations for the Hornets for a couple years when they were going down in New Orleans. And yeah, Hall of Famer, you know, obviously that super iconic call with Marv Albert. It's you know, part of you know, sports lexicon these days. You know, if you remember a few years ago, Chris Collinsworth had one of these sort of iconic calls too, but he was just basically playing off this, you know, when Aaron Rodgers came back onto the field during a Sunday night football game and said, hey, this is a Willis Reed moment that we're witnessing here. So even though it was a long time ago, you know, over 50 years ago, that moment, it is something that, you know, I think, you know, is generational, beyond just, you know, one generation where, you know, people know about that and know who Willis Reed is and so forth. And just a big, big legacy there. And, you know, the tributes have been pouring in.
All right. That'll do it for us. We're going to leave you with how Clyde Walt Frazier and Mike Breen reflected on Willis Reed. We'll kind of let you out on with that conversation on the MSG broadcast the other night. We'll kind of walk you out with that as we get to the end of this week's edition of the Announcer's Schedule podcast, episode 41 in the books. We drop on Thursday on Last Word on Sports. You can check out Tell Me a Story I Don't Know and the Last Word on Sports media podcast with TJ Reeves. That is on the feed. Like, rate, review, subscribe. All of the podcasts here on the feed. And we'll be back again next week for Phil. Mike, here's Mike and Clyde Frazier with Willis Reed passing away. We'll take that to the end, and we'll talk to you next week here on the Announcer Schedule podcast.
What's been the prevailing thought that you've had in the last day?
I just thank God that I got to know Willis Reed. I was a teammate. He's a magnificent person. And, Mike, I've been meandering all day. The joy, the pain, excruciating. Tonight, I'm going to laugh. I'm going to cry. He was that type of person, folks. He made me the guy, the player who I am, and the man that I am off the court as well.
What about Willis made you have that love and respect that was so deep?
Well, his generosity, his honesty. He was just a big country boy with a big heart. I copied his handwriting. He has an excellent handwriting. I copied his tenacity on the court, always giving 110%. The way he dealt with the media, the fans, all of that I learned from Willis Reed, just being around him. He was a magnificent role model for me.